President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Today's chaplain is J. Michael Byron from the faculty of the St. Paul Seminary and the Church of St. Cecilia in St. Paul. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Most gracious God, before we utter our first word today, before we engage in our first labors, before we leap into the passion and the joy and the frustration of the work that we have come here to do, we offer to you the only gift that we are totally free to offer to you as our own, the gift of our attention, in grateful thanks and humble petition. For there is absolutely nothing else that we hold that is not first an undeserved gift from you, life itself, freedom, prosperity, and community. And as if you have given special trust and responsibility to the people in this chamber for the wise oversight of the community that is Minnesota, so keep us ever aware that we are stewards of your gifts, not lords, and make us always mindful of every person who calls this place home and who has a right to our concern and compassion. May all of the voices be given a respectful hearing as we strive to do the good that will make us stronger together. The voices that come from the cornfield and from the factory, from the iron mine and from the halls of finance, from the school and from the reservation, from the homeless shelter and from the nursing home. Voices that call you by a name other than God, and of course, the voices from across this center aisle. Open us to the guidance that you are always pleased to give whenever we ask, as we are doing in this moment of prayer. We are honored to be able to bless you because you have first blessed us. Amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daley, DeKreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eden, Fishbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Lori, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Siebenskoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
A quorum is present. Moving to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the first message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which the amendments to the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 1917, a bill for an act relating to education. Senate file number 1917 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1917 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
And Senator Wolf, I believe that those can be found in the House Journal on March 28th, page 7511, and third reading was in the Senate Journal on March 15th, page 4479. So if anybody is looking for those. Senator Wolf, some explanation to the bill.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I handed out a sheet of paper that is the added language to the bill that we passed unanimously. It just has additional looking at restrictive procedures by the MDE and school districts in reporting and keeping track of data. And it's on the sheet that was handed out if you want to look at it in entirety, but I'd be happy to answer questions if anybody has any.
Further discussion to the Wolf motion, Senator Harrington.
Madam President, I rise to support the Wolf motion. Having conversations with NAMI, the National Association for Folks Who Work With Mental Illness, they were in support of this bill. They were very concerned about the discontinuation of prone restraint because there were no other good alternatives that had yet been developed. They supported the extension. As a person who has worked in schools with folks that have behavioral issues, I can tell you the prone restraint is used as infrequently as possible, but it is a necessary component of being able to keep order in schools these days.
Further discussion on Senator Wolf's motion? Seeing none, Senator Wolf renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1917 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The Secretary will give Senate File 1917 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1917, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1917. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under messages from the House, the secretary will read the message.
This message is not on the agenda. Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 2455, House File Number 2455, an act relating to the City of Montgomery. The House respectfully requests that the Conference Committee three members be appointed thereon. Grunhagen, Sanders, and Winkler have been appointed to such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 2455 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 2455, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee of conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
To Senator DeCryf's motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. And our messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files number 1816, 329, 2149, 2508, 1983, 1813, 2187, and 2239. Albany Mathewis, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Moving to the fourth order of business, the first reading of House bills. They are printed on page 2 of today's Senate agenda. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I would move that we lay House File 1983 on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining will be given first reading and referred as indicated. First reading. Moving to the fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports pursuant to Joint Rule 2.03, which refers to late bills, and also the reports pertaining to appointments.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum. There are several, I believe, that need to be laid on the table.
Madam President, I move the reports pertaining to the appointments be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the sixth order of business, the second reading of Senate bills. There are several printed on page 7 of today's Senate agenda, second reading. Moving to the seventh order of business, there are several second reading of House bills. There are several printed on page 7, second reading. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's Senate bill introduction. They will be referred as indicated, first reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, there under motions and resolutions, there is one Senate resolution, number 143, that will be referred to rules. Senator Dames.
Madam President, I move that Senate file number 247 be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Dames.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do not concur in attachments by the House to Senate File 247 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee and conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Vanderveer.
Madam President, I move that the appointment withdrawn from the Committee on Local Government and Elections and placed on the confirmation calendar under Senate Rule 8.2, reported to the in the Journal for January 26, 2012, be returned to the committee from which it was withdrawn. It is the Chair of the Metropolitan Council, Susan M. Haig.
Thank you, Senator Vanderveer. Any discussion to Senator Vanderveer's motion? Seeing none, Senator Vanderveer renews his motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vanderveer.
Madam Chair, I move that the appointments withdrawn from the Committee on Local Government and Elections and placed on the confirmation calendar under Senate Rule 8.2 reported in the Journal for March 27, 2012 be withdrawn to the committee from which they were withdrawn. It was the Metropolitan Council appointees. Do I need to name them, Madam Chair?
You should, Senator Vanderveer, if you could.
James Brimmeyer, Stephen Chavez, John Commerce, Gary Cunningham, John Doan, Adam Dwinning, Stephen Elkins, Richard Kramer, Harry Melander, Jennifer Munt, Edward Reynoso, Sandra Rummel, Lona Schreiber, Roxanne Smith, Gary Van Eel, and Wendy Wolf.
To Senator Senator Latz.
Madam President, will Senator Vanderveer yield for a question?
Senator Vanderveer will yield. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Vanderveer, could you please explain to the body where these are in terms of the process and what the purpose is of your motions right now?
Senator Vanderveer.
Madam Chair and Senator Latz, the purpose is the committee intends to take up some of these, as many of these confirmations as possible, beginning next week.
Senator Vanderveer renews his motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 2314, number 42 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration.
Any explanation, Senator Perry?
It was shipped off to the wrong location, and rules say that it has to go to Rules and Administration, so that's why we're asking.
On Senator Perry's motion, Senator Lurie.
Yes, Madam President. Could we find out a little bit about what the bill is and what committee it was improperly referred to?
Senator Perry.
It is a resolution for the Khmer that we had, and the resolution was supposed to go to rules first.
Thank you,
Senator
Madam
Lurie.
President. Thank you, Senator Perry.
Senator Perry renews his motion that Senate File 2314, number 42 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 1466, number 127 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. This is a resolution, and the rules state that it needs to go to Rules and Administration. I want to make sure it follows the proper course.
To Senator Howe's motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum. Oh. Sorry, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 1957 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance, given a second reading and placed on general orders.
Some explanation to that, Senator Nelson.
Yes, Madam Chair. This bill is passed out of both Jobs and State Gov with recommendation to pass. It was sent to Finance, but the fiscal note shows there's no cost. I'll be glad to pass that out.
To Senator Nelson's motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senate File 1957, second reading. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing recommendations in the Conference Committee report on Senate File 1567 be now adopted, and that the bill be repassed and amended by the as amended by the Conference Committee.
Explanation to that motion, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Members, this is the environmental bill that passed off the Senate floor. We had Conference Committee yesterday. It was agreed upon. And Madam President, would you like to go through the whole bill? If you'd like me to go through a description of the whole bill.
I think you do need to offer some explanation on the Conference Committee report.
Thank you, Madam President. I will. I'll start out by saying thank you for the opportunity to allow me to present this today. The bill continues to reform and streamline the environmental review and permitting that we started last year. Those of you remember House File Number 1 that passed last year with bipartisan support and was signed by the governor. Last year, that particular bill did, and we've heard from businesses across the state, that House File 1 created jobs and streamlined the permitting process and was a complete success. We've heard from businesses across the state, and we've also heard from state agencies who have testified in front of our committee on House File 1 created jobs. That was a real interesting conversation we had with the MPC there, and was directly asked to the MPCA spokesperson if he thought the House File 1 did in fact create jobs quicker, and he agreed with that. That certainly has got us going in the right direction. This bill
This year will again create jobs across our state, and I would like to thank Governor Dayton, Commissioner Ozen, and Commissioner Landwehr for their willingness to streamline, increase efficiency, remove duplication and overlap, and bring our agencies to the 21st century. Members, there are no silver bullet out there, as the governor and the MPCA commissioner have stated, but they would like to have the state agencies operate again, and I've repeated this several times, at the speed of commerce, and that's what's happening with these, over these last 2 years with these two bills. This legislation will foster economic development while still ensuring that the public's health and our natural resources are protected. The changes we made in the conference committee, for the most part, were technical in nature and recommended by the administration. We did delete two sections with regards to the state shutdown members, but Governor Dayton has assured us that he would like to address these issues later on in other legislation. But for the most part, as usual, the Senate prevailed in conference committee negotiations. I need to pass that along. I would like to thank the all the conferees, including Senator Peterson, Senator Carlson, Senator Gazelka, Senator Stump, Representative Fabian, Hancock, McNamara, Torkelson, and Dill for their hard work in putting this good bill together. I would also like to thank the agencies and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce for their ability to work together to put a good common sense piece of legislation that creates jobs and opportunities once again for Minnesotans. I'd also like to thank the Revisor's Office for their willingness to stay late last night and process the committee report. And with any environment bill, I must give special thanks to the wonderful Senate Counsel, including the great Greg Knopf, Mr. Mueller, my staff, and Carlin Doyle Fontaine for their hard work in making this bill a complete reality. Thanks again for the opportunity to present this bill. I ask for your support in passing Senate File 1567, and I do stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senator Ingebrigtsen's motion. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of this bill, this conference report as well. And I think it was a cooperative effort, to come to an agreement on some difficult issues. And as Senator Ingebrigtsen mentioned, some of the provisions that were sticking points, and I think in particular on our side of the caucus, or our caucus, have been removed. And I really believe that we have a report here that most everyone can support.
Further discussion. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, if Senator Ingebrigtsen could yield.
Senator Ingebrigtsen will yield. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I apologize. I missed some of your presentation, so if you've already answered this question, just tell me I answered this question. You should have been listening to me. My question is on Section 7, which is line 8.6 of the Conference Committee report, and that is the amendment that was brought in by Senator Magnus, I think originally under the name of Senator Dames, about manure digester permits. And I had a series of questions when that amendment was offered to this bill, none of which were answered at that time. Chief among those questions is, what exactly are we doing here? If we simply eliminate the requirement for air emission permits for manure digesters, what kind of pollution are we then just simply allowing to happen without any process of a permit and review process? How much more pollution is going to go in the air as a result of eliminating this requirement?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Dibble, for that question. The folks that in question here still are going to have to follow the federal guidelines and federal laws. That's not going to be changing at all with this legislation.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Ingebrigtsen would once again yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I don't think that's actually true. And in fact, we're a state that to whom our responsibilities for air quality and managing these permits are delegated by the EPA. That delegation authority, if not handled responsibly, is conceivably and quite possibly eliminated and rescinded, and then the permitting that we lack doing
is going to revert back to the office out of Chicago, and quite possibly, rather than make things easier and more efficient for manure digesters that want to be installed, we could make them less efficient, slower, and more expensive. Senator Ingebrigtsen, was this amendment examined in light of that possibility that our delegation authority by the EPA might be eliminated if we're simply giving a blanket exemption to all manure digesters?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you again, Madam Chair, Madam President, and Senator Dibble. This particular permit, if you look at Section 7, is not talking about the digester itself. It's the generation equipment, the electrical generator associated with the on-farm manure digester. And again, outside the metropolitan area or the city of a first or second class. So it does not, that particular function does not require a federal permit.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thank you, Madam President. Well, once again, my line of questioning has proven fruitless. It was fruitless when I asked when this amendment was offered, and once again, we have no answers. We have simply a blanket exemption with no examination of the policy implications, the implications for Minnesota's ability to continue managing its responsibilities under the EPA, and we have no idea how much more pollution is going to go in the air as a result of this. This is simply brought in by amendment to the floor without a committee process. Apparently, that's something that is frowned upon by folks like myself, for example, but we can just kind of stick these things on without any committee process or any examination or answering any basic questions. Members, that and a number of other provisions in this bill around water conservation, which may or may not threaten our obligations under multi-state compacts, I think there are several really bad ideas in this bill, and I would encourage a red vote.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you for those comments, Senator Dibble. But rest assured, members, yes, in fact, this was brought by way of an amendment, but this has been discussed with the agency, the PCA. They are okay with this. And members, with this, to understand it a little bit clearer, these people here that are dealing with the manure process and actually making energy out of this process is doing good things with the environment. There's just absolutely no question about that. So we've had many discussions over the years about digesters and what they do and how good they are to produce electricity and produce other energy. Rest assured, we didn't move forward here as it may be suggested recklessly here by the senator, and I don't think he meant that. I might be putting words in his mouth, but the PCA was involved, and they were just fine with this amendment.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm disappointed you still have the 150-day timeline in there, even if the permit is not substantially complete. You could just put in a few basic things on the front of it, and they have their clock start ticking, even though you don't have the permit anywhere near ready. You also kept the provision in that feedlots that don't require an NPDES permit, you're still extending the life of them to 10 years. And we've had cases in Minnesota where there were some that were so arrogant, they were just totally violating the law. The only way they were able to shut them down was to let their permit run out. And if we're extending it 5 more years, it's just protecting the bad apples. And finally, the provision where the permit applicants are basically able to write their own permits with the permit professionals, I think they call them. I think this is a bad step backwards, and I urge members to defeat it as well.
Further discussion. Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 1567 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 1567 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1567, a bill for an act relating to environment. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1567. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 50 ayes and 16 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Meeting under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the bills noted on your special order sheet on your desk be made special orders for immediate consideration, with the exception, Madam President, of number 120, House File 2333 by Newman. We will remove that, all others then being made special orders.
Senator Senjum has designated that those bills special orders. I believe they were handed out, but if you don't have one available, they're here at the front of the chamber. We will begin with number 121 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1981, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1981 is a bill that has been brought to me by the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis, and it's a bill that that deals with the Civilian Review Board authority for the City of Minneapolis. Under current Minneapolis ordinance, the Civilian Review Authority has the authority to make specific findings with regard to police misconduct. And that is pursuant to ordinance number 172.10, which says that the Civilian Review Authority has the right to make findings of fact and conclusions based on those findings of fact. Madam President, this would seem to be a matter of local control and one in which I would normally not get involved with, but when the police officers came to talk to me about this matter, I did take a look at it, and I agree that the state does have an interest in this matter for three specific reasons. We currently have a statute in Minnesota under 626.89, which deals with civilian review authority, and under subdivision 2 of that statute, it appears that the city of Minneapolis is the only city in the state that is exempted from the applicability of this statute. And so I took a look at this a little bit further, and I think that given the fact that we, in Minnesota statute, we have singled out a single city for applicability to a statewide statute is something that the legislature does not generally do. We simply generally don't carve out exceptions for special interest groups, specific cities and counties, etc. Next, I was thinking that we really should have some uniformity in the discipline procedures for police officers, irrespective of where they work, because they are all licensed by the state of Minnesota. In the case of Minneapolis, the Civilian Review Authority is in a position to make determinations of misconduct rather than a recommendation, which is what other jurisdictions do. The third reason why I felt this would be an appropriate matter for the legislature to take up is because of an issue concerning due process. During the committee hearing on this matter, it became pretty apparent that there is a significant due process issue in that there is really no right of a hearing for the police officer who is being accused of misconduct. Rather, it more resembles a meeting. And at that meeting, there are investigation materials that are reviewed. There are witnesses that can come in and appear, either through a written statement or to actually give testimony. But those witnesses, when they give testimony or pursuant to a written statement, is information that is not given under oath. And when witnesses to
something like misconduct are given, and there is no consequences for that testimony, i.e. not being given under oath. That, to me, raises a due process issue. And the third thing in this meeting, which the Civilian Review Authority calls a hearing, there is no opportunity for the accused police officer to cross-examine those who are accusing him of misconduct. And there again, the right to confront a witness against you in terms of cross-examination, in my mind, is one of the basic premises of due process. And lest you think that this is not a severe or significant issue, the findings of fact that the Civilian Review Authority makes in the city of Minneapolis does in fact have serious consequences for the officer, because those findings that are made without his right to a hearing follow that officer throughout the course of his career, irrespective of whether he's working for the city of Minneapolis or another law enforcement agency. Senate File 1981 eliminates the problems that I have just described to you, because the bill removes the ability of the Civilian Review Authority to make the findings, but in doing so, they retain the ability, that is, the Senate Review Authority retains the ability to make recommendations regarding allegations of misconduct. So for those reasons, Madam President, I felt that this was an appropriate request on the part of the police officers in the city of Minneapolis, and I would request your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 1981. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam President and members. The issues that Senator Newman raised in this bill and the changes that he seek, you know, I might agree with. Certainly, you know, the special exemption that the city of Minneapolis has with regard to the Peace Officers Bill of Rights, you know, and some of the issues that were raised as well in terms of findings of fact or determinations may be great ideas. But here's the simple truth. The Civilian Review Authority was established in the city of Minneapolis a number of years ago for a very good reason. It was established because citizens felt like they really weren't receiving a fair, they didn't have a forum and a fair place to present issues that would rise up in their interactions with the police. And so the Civilian Review Authority was established and has proven to be a very valuable body, if for no other purpose than to make sure that that essential relationship between the police and the community that the police serves can be maintained and managed, particularly when things aren't going so well. I was a part of the effort to establish the Civilian Review Authority. I myself was the victim of pretty serious police abuse and was witness to some very serious police abuse directed at people I knew and loved. To be sure, the Civilian Review Authority has not been the perfect entity and has undergone some very significant changes in the past, and those changes were brought about as a result of a conversation, a process, a political process that was well managed. And you know, we're in the present moment when there seem to be some other changes to make sure the Civilian Review Authority is doing what it originally set out to do, protecting all the stakeholders' interests. And like I said, Senator Newman's ideas may be good, but the simple fact is that the city of Minneapolis has just started this process and has established a panel in a process to taking a look at what the CRA does, how it does it, what's advisable in terms of the issues, the legal issues vis-a-vis the professional peace officers, but also preserving that forum and that format for folks to come forward where they feel like there's a trusted place where they can raise the issues that they've encountered. That just started. That conversation is just now beginning. And I think Minneapolis and the citizens of Minneapolis working with the police have shown that they're able to work through that process if an atmosphere of trust is built around that. And I heard some complaints this morning from one of my colleagues that somehow the police are being kept out of that conversation, so the police have to come to the legislature and make this happen. And that's actually not true. And the truth is that this conversation and this process has just started. So this is really an issue of folks coming over. You know, they have a lot of ability to flex a lot of muscle and just kind of do what they want. I understand that. If you have that opportunity, you take it. But this is a very, very sensitive issue. My advice to the police, to the city of Minneapolis, is we can't trifle with that relationship. The power of the police is very, very serious. It's a very serious matter. And when that trust is questioned, the integrity of that relationship between those who are served by the police and the police is threatened, not much that's good comes from that. And that's the danger of simply kind of rolling the city of Minneapolis, rolling this process that has been established, kind of forcing one party, one stakeholder's view of things in this legislative setting and not really embarking on that collaborative process that works so well in Minneapolis across a wide diversity of stakeholders and communities.
Further discussion on Senate File 1981. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. I appreciate the comments and what Senator Dibble has had to say with respect to this. I would again remind you that this civilian review authority is not being eliminated. The civilian review authority in the city of Minneapolis will retain the right to make its recommendation. They will retain the right to make inquiries as to police misconduct, which is appropriate. What is important to remember here is that, number one, it's the only city in the state that is exempted from this statute, which in and of itself I find troubling. But more importantly, while I recognize that it's a sensitive issue within the city of Minneapolis, there are always two sides to the story, and there are some police officers who have been hurt by the findings of the Civilian Review Authority, and they simply do not have an avenue. They do not have a forum to go to in order to have their findings of misconduct removed or challenged. So it seems to me that it's eminently reasonable for the city of Minneapolis to follow the rest of the state of Minnesota in terms of civilian review authorities, have the civilian review authority make the recommendations, and then let the process go from there. But again, we are not eliminating or jeopardizing or prohibiting the civilian review authority within the city of Minneapolis.
Senator Harrington.
Madam President, I'm rising in support of Senator Newman's bill. Having been under civilian review authority and having participated in civilian review authority with the city of St. Paul, his bill would bring Minneapolis's procedures into line with St. Paul and with the vast majority of how other police departments in the state of Minnesota operate. It is simply a matter of eliminating a piece of legislation that predates civilian review or postdates civilian review and bringing them on so that the Peace Officer Bill of Rights applies to all police officers in the state of Minnesota. Nobody, I can promise you, nobody in this body wants to eliminate police brutality or police misconduct more than I do. Frankly, no cop wants to be painted with the broad brush of a bad cop. We all want our honor that we take an oath to uphold to be shining and to be pure. I really do believe that this simply will give us a level playing field for the city of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Police Department to work out a very fair process. And frankly, I hope that they adopt some of the similar processes the city of St. Paul and other jurisdictions have, because I think they're going to find that they're going to have a much better product where officers who do offend are held accountable, and there are officers who do not, are not labeled as bad cops forever and ever without any chance for having their name cleared.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Harrington and Senator Newman, I strongly agree with you on the first part of the bill. I think that including them under the Police Officer Bill of Rights is very important. I strongly support that. I think the rest of it comes to a certain point, and this is not defending what was going on in Minneapolis, because I'm not tracking it. You and I aren't residents of the city. But I think that there's some legitimate things there that have to be addressed, and I'm very disappointed to hear what I'm hearing, that the city's not meeting with the peace officers and trying to work it out in a reasonable way. But it seems to me that some of the parts of that second section of the bill might be going further than we should be going at the state level. That's my sense of it. In other words, there's a lot in the bill that's appropriate, but there are other parts that I think we should be waiting on at this time.
Secretary will give Senate File 1981 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1981, a bill for an act relating to police officers. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1981. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 5 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on to number 12 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1793, Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam President, members. Senate File 1793 is a bill for an act clarifying health plan company definitions. This legislation is intended to resolve the confusion in current statutes results from overapplication and imprecise use of the term health plan company. Senate File 1793 clarifies that insurance products that are already excluded from the definition of a health plan are also excluded from being used to determine the designation of a health plan company. That is the outline of the bill, and I'll stand for questions.
Discussion of Senate File 1793. Secretary will give Senate File 1793 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1793, a bill for an act relating to insurance, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next under consideration is number 11 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1524, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1524 is a bill that relates specifically to architecture and engineering board license provisions. I just want to take a moment to thank Senator Metzen as a co-author on this bill. This bill really is a policy bill from the Minnesota Board of Architecture, Engineering, Land Surveying, Landscape Architects, Geoscience, and Interior Design professionals as well. And it specifically relates to a number of features, including some changes, adding some ethics education to some of their continuing education, and more importantly, quite frankly, adds a significant cost savings to the general fund. Just in the first year, it adds $29 million back to the general fund, and then $35 million each year subsequently as it moves forward. Members, we'd be grateful for your support on this bill.
Further discussion of Senate File 1524. Secretary will give Senate File 1524 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1524, a bill for an act relating to occupations and professions, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1524. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration under special orders number 31 on the general orders calendar, House File 1923, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. This bill relates, House File 1923 relates specifically to water supply demand reduction requirements. What this bill does is basically put some authority back into local municipalities, local city councils, and gives them an option to implement a conservation rate structure or implement a uniform rate structure with additional conservation programs to achieve certain demand reductions. You may know that right now the state requires that, is asking that folks in their use of water use 75 gallons. The target is 75 gallons per person per day. And we have many, many communities across the state that are significantly under that right now based on the conservation methods they've already introduced. For example, one of the communities I represent in St. Cloud is already at 64 gallons a day. Another one in Waite Park is already at 68 gallons per day per person. And what this bill does is simply say, recognize that if a city is already under that requirement, we ought not to ask them to introduce another tiered water rate. And so our hope is that you can support this bill as well, and certainly would ask for that. And I recognize the hard work some communities are doing to conserve water in this state.
Further discussion on House File 1923. Secretary will give Senate or House File 1923 its third reading.
House File Number 1923, a bill for an act relating to waters, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 55 ayes and 9 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 138 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2181. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 2181. Members, if you remember correctly, this has to do with the Renewable Development Fund. We put a freeze on that fund last year with any appropriations going out except for REPI payments and the solar rebate program. The fund was designed to operate as a competitive bidding process overseen by Xcel Company and the Advisory Board. The selected projects would go before the PUC for final approval. And while that has shown to be very successful, over the years, the legislature took it upon themselves to legislate or to appropriate money out of the fund. So the intention of this bill, Senate File 2181, is to bring the fund back to its original intent and provide a return to the ratepayers. And there was an OLA report back in 2010. We took our guidance from that report and some of the recommendations going forward that the auditor said we should address would be to, number one, clarify the purpose and the power of the board that it advises. Number two, to adopt a single competitive process with clearer criteria. To post the status of individual projects and account finances on the public website, and to provide for administrative cost. Members, right now, currently, the fund has about $11.8 million in the fund itself. There's between $25 to $30 million that goes into the fund annually, and right now, there's $500 million over the life of the fund through 2021. So the clear purpose of this bill is that greatly expands yet better defines the purpose for what the money can be spent on. Number one, the funds must be spent on renewable electric energy sources. Anyone can apply for these funds. There are no technologies that are earmarked in this bill, and no technologies excluded from this bill. And there's also a strong renewable and development R&D component to the bill. The funds in the account can be spent on increasing the market penetration of renewable electric energy resources. It can promote the startup, expansion, and attraction of the renewable projects and stimulate research and development, and also develop near commercial and demonstration scale infrastructure delivery projects. All the expenditures are streamlined through one competitive bidding process. So there's a single process for approving these expenditures. First, it goes through an advisory group that consults with Excel to develop the RFP. Then a third party reviews all the RFPs. And then it goes to the PUC, and which gives the final approval for all the projects. The bill also explicitly allows the utility to spend up to 5% for administration of the fund. And it also clearly says it's hands-off from the legislature to appropriate any money from this fund once enacted. I think that's very important. The accountability and the transparency in this bill is that it requires the utility to submit yearly reports to the committees with jurisdiction over energy policy. The reports must include the financial, environmental, and other benefits to the utility ratepayers in the state. So that's the return on investment. And the bill requires final reports to be posted online, accessible through a single public website. All reports must acknowledge that the work was made possible in whole or part by the utility's ratepayers. There was many recommendations from interested parties members, so we reinstated language that required the company to pay into the fund each year the plants are not in operation. We also clarified infrastructure language to satisfy the environmental groups, and we provided flexibility for higher education institutions to conduct research and development. And as I said, there is a strong R&D component in this bill. The higher education institutions have the ability to apply for multiple R&D projects at one time. So they can go to the advisory group and apply for, say, a block grant, but they must show that the projects that are going to be funded going forward. This gives flexibility, accountability, and transparency. These projects are exempt, members, from the third-party reviews. So it goes to the advisory group, then a peer group would be looking at these projects, and then it goes to the PUC for final approval. Members, if this bill does not pass, then we go back to what we had last year, and we don't honor what the OLA says. I think that would be very irresponsible to not pass a bill that has been agreed upon and has strong support from many people. Number one, from the Division of Energy Resources, DER. The governor's office, we assume, is in favor. We haven't heard one way or another, but I would assume they would have contacted us if they were not in support, but his director of the DER is in favor of this bill. The Isaac Walton League and Fresh Energy are also supportive of it. So with that, members, I do just want to say a couple other things. This is not a state fund. This is a private fund through Excel, and we owe it to these ratepayers to have accountability, transparency, and some return on investment. So I ask for your support on this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 2181. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Madam President. I support the concept of this and support this bill. I do have a couple of concerns as it relates to the storage issue. I'm glad that the provision kept in the payments even after the plant closing. However, we still need to do more work in this area, and I'm certain that that the bill does put forth that issues will be merit-based. This particular bill doesn't make changes in where some of the money is allocated, and in particular, I would suggest to members that we should not spell out a technology allocation in our statutes like this, but we're going to continue to work on this.
Further discussion on Senate File 2181. Secretary will give Senate File 2181 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2181, a bill for an act relating to energy, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2181. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 2 on the general orders calendar, House File 1384, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Before you, we have House File 1384, a bill concerning Fraudulent Transfers Act, statute of limitations for charities. This bill adds a statute of limitations to the Fraudulent Transfers Act for qualified nonprofit organizations. The law currently contains no specific statute of limitations for charitable contributions. The statute of limitations in this bill would be 2 years after the time of the contribution and will mirror federal bankruptcy statutes of limitations for charitable organizations. It is supported by the Minnesota Council on Nonprofits, Minnesota Teen Challenge, Big Brothers Big Sisters, ICA Food Shelves, and has been vetted with the Minnesota Bankers Association, and I'd appreciate a green vote.
Further discussion on House File 1384. Secretary will give House File 1384 its third reading.
House File Number 1384, a bill for an act relating to fraudulent transfers, third reading.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, I had planned to offer an amendment to a bill that Senator Daley had and learned just today that that bill was pulled and may not
go forward. And so I had not found, I'd actually thought that there'd be no possibility of another bill that it could fit. And seeing this bill, it actually occurred to me it might fit. So I wondered if Senator Cruz could just hold off for just a moment so I could show it to him. No? Madam President, I understand that does not work. I withdraw my request. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Secretary will take the roll on House File 1384. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 103 on the general orders calendar, House File 2793, Senator DeCraif.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 2793 is a bill brought to me on behalf of the Minnesota State Fair to help many of the amusement ride operators at the fair to transport their rides to the fair legally. Many of the amusement rides at the State Fair are transported into the state on twin trailers. In fact, many of the rides are constructed specifically to be transported on twin trailers and have been transported that way for a number of years. Current law allows commodities to be transported on twin trailers. The State Patrol recently informed the fair that amusement rides were beyond the definition of commodities and thus not authorized to be transported on twin trailers. The State Patrol suggested the fair seek this change and add the words property or equipment to the definition. This change has the support of the State Patrol, and MnDOT drafted the suggested language. There are no known opponents.
Further discussion on House File 2793. Secretary will give House File 2793 its third reading.
House File Number 2793, a bill for an act relating to transportation, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2793. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 13 on the general orders calendar, House File 2253, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. This is a Health and Human Services provision. It relates to children who qualify for medical assistance who are deaf, deafblind, or hard of hearing and are in need of commitment proceedings due to mental illness where they might harm themselves or others. It simply allows the counties to choose, to send them to a facility within a compact state that is specifically designed to accommodate children who need American Sign Language. These children are in crisis, and we're having to hire interpreters for the cost of several thousand dollars a day in order to facilitate their treatment. By sending them to an out-of-state facility, we save money, we meet their needs much more efficiently, and I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on House File 2253. Secretary will give House File 2253 its third reading.
House File Number 2253, a bill for an act relating to human services, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 19 on the general orders calendar, House File 1903, Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 1814 is the Honor Guard Stipend Preference Modification Bill. What it is about, members, is the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs currently has the authority within available funds to provide $50 to each local unit of a congressionally chartered veterans organization to help partially reimburse that unit for expenses incurred in providing the honor guard detail at veterans' funerals. What we're doing here with this particular bill is removing the provision that allows the commissioner to prioritize organizations that do not have charitable gambling operations. In essence, what this does is that all local units that qualify for reimbursement would be treated equally moving forward, and the payments to units with gambling would not be denied in the future. So it's a pretty straightforward, simple bill that we have here, Senate File 1814, and I would stand for any questions.
Further discussion on House File 1903. Secretary will give House File 1903 its third reading.
House File Number 1903, a bill for an act relating to veterans, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 1903. All those senators having voted, vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 20 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1856. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. This bill simply adds 501c19s as an expanded list of the purposes of charitable gambling donations. Currently, if you're a charitable gambling organization, you can contribute to a 501c3 freely, but you can't do that with a 501c19. And typically the 501c19s are the VFWs and the American Legions, and this bill would simply allow that as long as they don't currently have a gambling license. And I will stand for questions and appreciate a green vote.
Further discussion on Senate File 1856. Secretary will give Senate File 1856 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1856, a bill for an act relating to lawful gambling, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1856. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and one nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 26 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1689. Senator Craife.
Thank you, Madam President, and members of the Senate. I want to bring something to your attention. Today is Minnesota Vietnam Veterans Day. The significance of that, I think, is great, because when we brought our heroes back from Vietnam, we did not treat them right. And what I'm hoping that we can do in this next bill is to treat our veterans that are coming home today in a better way. Senate File 1689 is a veterans employment bill. Section 1 talks about USERRA. Section 2, state recruitment. Section 3, state emergencies, reemployment rights of non-public employees. And Section 4, veterans preference and state hiring. I'm sure everyone is aware that post 9/11 veterans in Minnesota struggling with employment rates north of 20%. Last fall, the Star Tribune ran an article highlighting the fact that 22.9% of our recently returned veterans don't have a job. Only Michigan and Indiana veterans have a tougher time. Clearly, the best way to get our veterans back to work is through broad, sustained economic growth. As we work toward that goal, the state can help in other ways. We all recognize veterans possess skills beneficial to the workplace and our economy as a whole. Their experience, training, and leadership qualities are important to our state, and we must do more to make sure these skills are not left on the bench. Before you, we have Senate File 1689, which includes a few provisions which, taken together, and with Senator Daley's bill here today as well, aim to help improve the employment climate for veterans. My bill intends to address veterans' unemployment in part by encouraging the administration and the department commissioners to make greater effort to hire veterans. When a veteran returns home from federal active duty, federal law ensures that they are entitled to the job they left. This law is called Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act, or USERRA for short. Private sector employees are responsible for hiring veterans to their old positions, and if it is found that this is not done, there is exposure to civil liability. The state, through the 11th Amendment of the Constitution, is immune from civil liability if the state does not rehire a veteran to their previous job. My bill strips the state of civil immunity in these cases and puts the state on par with the private sector in veterans reemployment contests. This language also places USERRA on par with other federal employment law in that the state has no immunity from liability in adherence to federal age discrimination, fair labor standards, family and medical leave, and ADA laws. Second, my bill would address veterans as a class of employees for the administration to target in their recruitment efforts. Currently, a number of protected classes are the target of recruitment. I want to add veterans to this list. Third, I'd like to point to Section 3, Reemployment Rights of Non-Public Employees. We have a unique situation in certain parts of Minnesota where Minnesotans serve in the National Guard units based in other states. In northwestern Minnesota, citizen soldiers are offered reemployment protection if they are called up to emergency service by the governor of Minnesota to help with flood relief efforts on the east side of the Red River. When these Guard members return home, they get their old job back. However, if that same person happens to be a member of the North Dakota National Guard and is called up to service by the governor of North Dakota to work on the west side of the Red River, the same reemployment guarantees are not in place. Admittedly, this would not impact a large number of people, but the reemployment rates are significant nonetheless. It's a matter of fairness. If a Minnesotan gets called up to service, he or she should get their old job back when they are done with their service. My bill would provide this reemployment protection for Guard members if a service call took them to any state rather than just this state. And last, the hiring program we're most familiar with is a point system preference, where veterans qualify for a potential state job receive a bonus of 5 or 10 points added to their score in certain evaluations for state jobs. Our system currently mirrors the federal government, and I'm looking to strengthen these provisions to 10 points for veterans and 15 points for disabled veterans. Again, we all know the best way to get our vets back working again is to grow the economy, and we will continue to do our part to support policies that do that. But in the meantime, these are a few measures that the state can take to improve the hiring climate for veterans, especially for state jobs, and I would appreciate your support.
Is there any discussion on Senate File 1689? Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Bach moves to amend Senate File Number 1689 as follows. Page 1 after line 19, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President, and I have talked with the author about this. What this amendment does, members, is gives Section 1 of the bill a different effective date than the rest of the bill, a special effective date for Section 1. It just allows for, rather than the day following final enactment, it makes a consideration for any pending civil actions that are in place. I appreciate your support.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion? Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, I have an amendment that I think is about to arrive, and with the President's permission, I'll explain what the amendment does. And you have one at the desk, but it's not to this bill. So I don't know if we can change it or not.
Senator Tomasoni, you need a stall talk.
Okay, that's okay. What I'm going to do here, Madam President. When I was 25, you know.
Madam President?
Senator Bach.
Maybe I'm the right guy to help Senator Tomasoni here. I do want to thank Senator DeCryf for bringing this bill forward. I actually had authored a bill on this ERISA issue relative to federal law and the state's exemption from immunity, where veterans come home and the state has eliminated their job and they have no recourse because a claim has to be filed in federal court and the state has immunity in that case. So, Senator Cryf, thank you for doing this. I actually had a constituent who did 3 tours in Iraq, members, came home and Minskew had eliminated his job. And he had no recourse because he worked for the state of Minnesota, couldn't sue the state. If he had worked for a private employer or for the federal government, he could have gone to federal court and got his job back or got some compensation for his job being eliminated. So the state has granted immunity from the 11th Amendment to the Constitution in other cases, things like the American with Disabilities Act. The state has authorized immunity to be able to allow ourselves to be sued in federal court. The Fair Labor Standards Act, the Family Medical Leave Act, the American Disabilities Act. So Senator Cryf's bill is not unusual in that we have allowed the state to be subjected to a lawsuit in federal court in other cases relative to violations of the federal law. So I want to thank him again for bringing this forward, and I'm pleased to hear that it's moving in the House so that we'll be able to get this on the governor's desk before we go home. And the enjoyable thing about bills like this is you don't know who they're going to benefit. And these are the kind of things that you leave when you leave the legislature sometime, that some constituent person you never knew is going to benefit from something that you did. And that's, I think, the kind of work that we should all be proud of, that somewhere in the future, some Minnesotan that feels like they've been not treated fairly by their government will have some recourse. So, Senator Cryf, thank you. Senator Tomasoni, how was that? Did that give you enough time?
Thank you, Senator Bach. And
Senator Bach, that was exactly the right amount of time.
Is arriving.
Madam President, I have an A51 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Tomasoni moves to amend Senate file number 1689 as follows. Page 2, after line 2, insert. This is the A51 amendment.
Members,
Senator Thomason.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this came to me as what happened to somebody in my legislative district. I've spoken to the author, and he's agreed to accept this. Basically, what this deals with is this is a member of the National Guard, the Minnesota Air National Guard from Duluth. He's been a member for 17 years. He reported for duty for a short stint and was injured. And as a result of his injury, he hasn't been able to go back to his job as a deputy sheriff. And what our laws do is our laws do not allow him to request an unpaid leave of absence. And what this will do is it will line this up so that while he can get health care from his military, he can't get his incapacity pay status from the military. And so by putting this language in the bill, what this does is it will give him the same job benefit protections for a public employee who is convalescing service member like himself as would be available to a public member being mobilized for active military service. And I think it's just a fairness issue, and it makes our veterans who are also working in the National Guard on the same footing as people who have been given a military service. Thank you.
On the amendment, Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would Senator Thomasoni yield?
I think he will yield.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Thomasoni, could you just clarify maybe, I know this just came quickly, but on line 1.9, where it says, for an injury or disease, I guess I'm just curious, is that a disease, say something like Agent Orange, or what would be the interpretation of that, maybe if you can help us out?
Senator Thomasoni.
Madam President, Senator Perry, I would assume that it means the disease that, as it says right after that, incurred during the active service. So in other words, something happened while they were in military service, either with the Guard or active with the on a military assignment, and that the disease occurred during that particular time. So I guess it could be just about anything that keeps them from going back to their regular job. But if you're comfortable with the language, I'm comfortable with it.
Is there any further discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment to Senate File 1689, the A51 amendment, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion on Senate File 1689? If not, the Secretary will give Senate File 1689 its third reading.
Senate File number 1689, a bill for an act relating to Veterans Affairs, third reading.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, who desire to vote? Senator Sender, would you care to vote? Okay. All senators having voted, who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and zero nays, the Senate file 1689 is passed and its title agreed to. The next on special orders is General Orders Number 40, Senate File 2354, Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 2354 is a bill that was brought to me by the Department of Veterans Affairs. And as we have heard much this springtime, there is a high unemployment rate among our veterans. And this is another measure to take a small step in the direction of helping our unemployed veterans. This bill would authorize state hiring authorities to hire qualified 30% disabled veterans on a non-competitive basis. It would provide a discretionary absolute preference for 30% disabled veterans, and Minnesota would join a number of other states and the federal government in providing some type of preference for disabled veterans. The 30% number, members, is in line with the Federal Defense Department and Veterans Affairs use of 30% as a threshold above which certain federal benefits kick in. Again, members, this bill will assist directly in employing our disabled veterans who are currently unemployed. I ask for your support. Thank you.
Is there any discussion on Senate File 2354? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 2354 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2354, Bill for an Act Relating to State Government, third reading.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and zero nays, the bill is adopted. Senator Latz votes aye. There being 63 ayes and zero nays, Senate File 2354 is passed and its title agreed to. Number 36 on general orders, Senate File 2271, Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 2271 will allow issuance of state awards to non-members of the Minnesota National Guard. This is an agency housekeeping bill. It will affect three different categories of potential award recipients, or award recipients. Members of the National Guard of other states who are worthy of recognition for supporting the Minnesota National Guard. Members of foreign military forces who are worthy of recognition for supporting the Minnesota National Guard. And citizens of Minnesota who are not members of the National Guard but contribute to the efficiency and effectiveness of this organization. Governor Pawlenty had authorized by executive order the authority to establish and present awards to non-members of the Minnesota National Guard, but that executive order has expired. The permanent order that was derived from the executive order is still in effect, but this amendment would clarify the authority to make these presentations. And I'm not sure if they've handed it out yet, but there is a letter that should be handed out from Adjutant General Nash, who's very much in support of this bill.
Is there any discussion on Senate File 2271? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 2271 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2271, a bill for an act relating to the military, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and zero nays, the bill is passed, Senate File 2271, and it's titled agreed to. Next is number 43 on general orders, Senate File 1754. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Senate File Number 1754. Let me explain. This is the Honor Guard per diem increase a bill that we're looking at. Under current law, it provides a list of lawful purposes for charitable gambling proceeds. Now, it also allows participating members of military marching, military color guard, the honor guard units to receive up to $35 per day. That's current law. This bill increases that amount that can be paid to individual members from $35 to $50 per day. This increase would be paid by charitable organizations which recognize military service to the United States, the state of Minnesota, or a community. Now, this bill also clarifies charitable gambling proceeds that if they are spent for improvements to real property, that the property must be made available to use free of charge to other nonprofit organizations, community groups, or service groups. It's a good bill, and I would ask for your green vote.
Is there any discussion on Senate File 1754? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1754 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1754, Bill for an Act Related to Lawful Gambling, third reading.
The Secretary will take the roll.
All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 45 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2316, Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 2316 is another veterans bill. It requires that when certain government subdivisions notify an employee who is a veteran of an intent to discharge that veteran from employment, that the state must state that the veteran has 60 days to identify and provide contact information about any person that wishes to present that veteran before a three-person hearing board. A failure of the veteran to provide information within those 60 days would constitute a waiver of those of that veteran's right to the hearing and all other legal remedies. Pretty straightforward bill, members. I would ask for your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 2316. Secretary will give Senate File 2316 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2316, a bill for an act relating to veterans, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2316. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Senjum, I believe you want to move for a brief recess. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, members, we're going to recess for approximately 2 hours. We're going to be awaiting committee reports.
Do you want to do conferees right now or not?
Madam Chair, it's been suggested we might do a recess for purposes of appointing a conference committee, and we'll come back and I'll readdress what I was just saying.
So, Senator Senjum moves for a brief recess. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are a brief recess. Senate will come to order. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, are there privileged reports at the desk?
Well, I think we should check, Senator Senjum. The Secretary will report the privileged report.
Senator Senjum from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee. On Senate File 247, Senators Dames, Roebling, Sharon. House File Number 2455, Senators DeKreif, Daley, Reinert. Senator Senjum moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, once again, we're going to recess for approximately 2 hours. Let's just stay at 4:30. We don't need, as you know, we don't need a full house, so to speak. We're simply going to receive committee reports, process them through. So at this point, it looks like Senator Dibble has a question or a comment. Senator Dibble.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I guess rise to a point of personal privilege or an inquiry. Madam President, I understand there's some sort of a new rule or a new order that has been given from the Secretary of the Senate that staff are, as of today, mysteriously not allowed to wear stickers or buttons on the floor of the Senate. I'm wondering if this is something that's come about at the initiative of the Secretary of the Senate or if this is coming at the initiative of the leadership of the of one of the caucuses or both caucuses. It seems a little curious that this has suddenly come up today. You know, I'm not, of course, crazy about buttons and stickers that are partisan or insulting in nature, but, you know, we wear stickers for various purposes. Staff has done that. I've never heard of this particular rule, and this seems to have come to light today. I think it's a little ironic or curious if it's today when we have, you know, several thousand members of the LGBT community here talking and engaging with their legislators on a point that has been somewhat controversial, and suddenly today, you know, those who want to stand in solidarity with those folks have a new rule that they have to contend with. So I'm just wondering, what is the origin and purpose of that particular rule, and why today?
Senator Dibble, this is not something that came about today, so I'm sorry if you felt that, that this was in some way directed at anyone specific, but I believe, to the best of my knowledge, it has been a policy that we have had, and I believe that some of it came about, Senator Dibble, when you had made an issue of senators wearing specific buttons. Obviously, we can't prevent senators from wearing the buttons they would like, but we felt that it would be an issue for staff, any staff member, nonpartisan, partisan alike, to wear any kind of display on the floor. I apologize if you felt this was in any way directed at a specific group, but like I said before, my understanding is this has been a policy for a while, and potentially that it just became where it was pointed out today that someone was wearing something. But in no way is it something that is new. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Reinert. Senator Rest.
Having voted on the prevailing side of Senate File 1856, I move that the Senate do now reconsider the vote by which Senate File 1856 was passed so that Senator Reinert's vote can be recorded correctly.
Secretary will restate the motion.
Having voted on the prevailing side, Senator Rest moves that the vote whereby Senate File 1856 was passed by the Senate on March 29th, 2012, be now reconsidered.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. I just, as the author of that bill, would like to honor that request. I had a conversation with Senator Reinhart. I didn't want to ruin my record of unanimous votes, and he indicated that he really thought he was voting for it, hit the wrong button, he was on his way somewhere. So I would encourage the body to allow a new vote on that bill for Senator Reinhart.
To Senator Rest's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. We now have in front of us Senate File 1856. Secretary will take the roll on 1856. All those senators, all those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President, and appreciate your earlier explanation on the point that I raised. But if I could please, or if this body could please benefit from knowing specifically in what form and manner this rule that was previously established was communicated to the Senate or to our staff. No one has any recollection or can find anything that you describe, and it seems like this issue is being enforced and called to attention for the first time today. So I appreciate and completely believe what you say, but I would like to know where and how people were supposed to be aware of this before, other than when folks started coming into the chamber today and being asked specifically to take off this particular sticker.
Senator Dibble, this actually would be more appropriate under announcements of Senate interest, but I will say that I have personally asked staff to remove buttons prior to this day. And we will follow up and discuss the issue. Meeting on the motions and resolutions reverting to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. The secretary will read the report.
Can I stop there?
Yeah. Senator Limmer from the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety, which was referred to Senate File Number 2304, a bill for an act relating to state government. It moves that when so amended, the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance and pursuant to Joint Rule 2.03, the bill is referred to the Rules and Administration Committee.
There's no further action necessary on that report. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, members, once again, the plan here is to recess until 4:30. We'll receive some committee reports at that point. We will process them. I'm not going to suggest you either come or not come. We should have some number of people in the chamber, but it is perhaps not absolutely necessary that everyone comes. So people can decide on accord what they want to do. Hopefully we need certainly enough to process those bills, which is a small number. So I would now move that we recess until 4:30, Madam President. I'm sorry.
Senator Est.
Madam President, would Senator Senjum yield?
Senator Senjum will yield. Senator Est.
Madam President, Senator Senjum, at what time will you be recommending that we reconvene session tomorrow?
Senator Senjum. She's asking about session tomorrow.
Yes, Madam President, members, the plan is to adjourn until 12 noon tomorrow, so I should offer that information as well. Thank you, Senator Rest.
Madam President.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. I just asked my office to call your office to see if there's been an ethics committee scheduled yet, so I hope we might have an announcement on that soon.
Just as a information for the members, we are not under announcements of Senate interest. We are under motions and resolutions, and Senator Senjum has a motion to recess until 4:30. Is that correct, Senator Senjum?
Madam President, yes, to recess until 4:30 to receive committee reports. At that point, we will adjourn until March 30th, 12 noon, but that is not for right now.
On Senator Senjum's motion to recess until 4:30, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are in recess. We'll move to the, we were remaining under motions and resolutions. We'll move to the Senate agenda addendum, the third order of business, messages from the House. There are several that the Secretary will read. The Secretary will read the first message from the House.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file, Senate file 1586, a bill for an act relating to public safety. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Gottwald, Pepin, and Hillstrom. Senate file number 1586 is herewith returned to the Senate. Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation and report of the Conference Committee on Senate file number 1567 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate file number 1567, a bill for an act relating to the environment. Senate file 1567 is herewith returned to the Senate. Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Moving to the fifth order of business, the reports of committee. Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the committee reports with the exception of the bills pursuant to Joint Rule 2.03.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the sixth order of business, they are their second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on page 4 of today's Senate agenda addendum. Second reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are two authors' motions printed on page 5 of the addendum. They will be taken as one motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, I move that House file number 2337 be taken from the table and given the second reading.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give House file 2337 a second reading.
House file number 2337, second reading.
Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, I move that House file number 2337 be laid on the table.
To that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. I have several members' excuses that need to be made. Without objection, the following members will be excused. Senator Nelson from 1 to 145, Senator Senjum from 110 to 115, Senator Koch from 145 to 230, Senator Bach from 2 o'clock to 205, and Senator Higgins from 110 to 130. Without objection, they are excused. Further announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I now move that the Senate adjourn until March 30th at 12 noon.
Senator St. John has moved we adjourn until Friday, March 30th at 12 noon. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.